I wonder if you've ever read Mark Twain's book, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. If you have, you'll maybe remember when Huck gets into conversation with Joanna, who's the youngest daughter of the Reverend Peter Wilkes, telling her that in the church of the Reverend Harvey Wilkes, her uncle in Sheffield, there were no less than 17 clergy, by which he meant 17 elders. But, he added, they don't all of them preach. Only one of them does. Well, Joanna asks in hearing this, well then, what does the rest of them do? To which Huck replies, oh, nothing much. They just loll around, pass the plate, and one thing or another. But mainly they don't do nothing. And Joanna asks in astonishment, what then are they for? To which Huck replies, and I just love this, well, they're for style. They're for style. Don't you know nothing? Well, it's a very serious question, isn't it? The elders, what are they for? Or if you like, what do they do? Well, we have the answer here in this passage in 1 Peter. And at the very outset, in order to properly grasp and understand what Peter is saying in it, we need to put it in its context. And the context, what this whole letter has been about, is that of suffering. The terrible suffering, the persecution, which was beginning to be unleashed upon the people of God. It's what Peter has been speaking about from the very beginning of the book. So if you just turn back a couple of pages to chapter 1, and at verse 6, Peter says, in this you greatly rejoice, that is, rejoicing in the hope of the gospel. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. And then chapter 4, verse 12, dear friends, do not be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering, as though something strange were happening to you. Now then, in the midst of such suffering, whatever it might be, what are the people of God to do? What are the people of God to do? Well, here's the answer at the end of chapter 4, verse 19. Do you see it? So then, those who suffer according to God's will should commit themselves to their faithful Creator and continue to do good. In other words, in the face of suffering, we are not to give up, but rather we are to commit our lives, we are to commit our cause to our faithful God, who promises to watch over us, who promises to comfort us and cares for us. And so the last verse of that passage that Bex read to us, verse 7, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares for you. But this begs the question, and this is the key question, how does this faithful Creator God do this? How does this faithful Creator God care for his people? And here's the wonderful answer. Do you see it? He does this by giving us elders. Verse 1, to the elders among you, Let me just point out here that the NIV is very poor. In fact, it fails miserably so, in that it misses out the vitally important connecting word that ought to be there, therefore. Therefore, to the elders among you. Says God to his people, here's how I'm going to look after you. Here's how I'm going to care for you in the midst of all that you're going to suffer. I'm giving you these men. I'm giving you these elders, and they're going to look after you. And so he says to these elders in verse 2, be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care. Putting them into your care. You see, here are these Christians under such terrible, terrible pressure, battered and bruised, burdened with so many cares. And God says to them, here's how I'm going to care for you. I'm giving you these elders. I'm giving you these shepherds. And what a comfort this must have been to these suffering believers. And what a responsibility. What a responsibility for those of them who were, and for those of us who are elders, these shepherds of God's flock. You see, here are God's most precious, precious possessions, the people purchased at the cost of his son's shed blood. Remember Boise Sinclair looking at his sheep and saying, they're all mine, they're all mine. And what God is saying to these elders, to these shepherds is, I want you to look after them for me. Now that's the context of the passage. He's not talking about elders just off the top of his head. And it's the reason why you shouldn't mentally be switching off at this point, in that I'm addressing the leaders tonight, addressing the elders who are here, not a bit of it. Because this is all about you. It's all about you and how you are to be looked after and cared for, especially so when you're suffering. Now, what does Peter have to say about the elders? Well, what he does here is to set before us at least, now I know that there are more, but he sets before us at least five of the marks, the identifying marks of the elder, the leader, the shepherd. Let me give them to you and we'll work our way through them briefly, so I'm determined to keep to my time and I've got my eye on the clock at the back. Let me tell you what they are, first of all. First of all, there is the privilege he acknowledges. Secondly, there is the gospel he knows. Thirdly, there is the maturity he displays. Fourthly, there is the task he fulfills. And fifthly, there is the reward he seeks. Okay, you know where we're going. First of all, the privilege he acknowledges. And almost in passing, look at what Peter says about this here, talking about himself. To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder. You see, what do you expect Peter to say here as he makes this appeal? Surely you expect him to say, I appeal as an apostle. But no, he doesn't say that. He says, now this is the Peter of chapter 1 and verse 1. Peter, the apostle of Jesus Christ. He says, I appeal as a fellow elder. One of my favourite TV programmes the past few years has been a series on BBC Two. Some of you might have seen it, Italy Unpacked. And in it, the British art critic Andrew Graham Dixon and the Italian chef Giorgio Locatelli travel the length and breadth of Italy, sharing with each other their knowledge of the country's culture and cuisine. And in their exploration of the culture, they end up visiting so many churches which have these magnificent frescoes on the roof and on the walls. And the frescoes on the roof of most of the churches always have some sort of an image of God. And then below the image of God, an image of the 12 apostles. And always amongst the 12 apostles, most prominent, Peter. Now, that's not the picture that Peter has in mind here. In that he's not saying, I'm appealing to you as an apostle who is above you. He says, I'm appealing to you as an elder who is amongst you. Do you see the wording? To the elders among you. And Peter says, I'm one of these elders. One of these elders who's with you, standing where you're standing, enduring what you're enduring, and seeking to minister as if it was Jesus himself who's doing the ministering. You see verse 4, when the chief shepherd appears. He's the chief shepherd. I'm one of his under shepherds, ministering in his name and on his behalf. Now that's the privilege. An awesome privilege. Remember Jesus' words to Peter, the restored Peter on the Galilee beach, John 21 and verse 16. He's saying, I'm going away. Now take care of my sheep. Pastor them for me. The privilege he acknowledges. Secondly, the gospel he knows. And again, almost in passing, verse 1, to the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder, a witness of Christ's sufferings, and one who also will share in the glory to be revealed. Now, Peter was a literal witness of this, a literal witness of the death of Christ and his subsequent resurrection glory, which we are to share in. But whilst the elder of today might not be able to be a witness to this literally so as Peter did, he is surely able, and it's one of the great qualifications of the eldership, he is surely able to be a witness to this spiritually so. In that, and in the words of one writer, he has a vital, personal experience of Christ. In other words, dying to sin in the death of Christ, that he died upon the cross, and being raised to life in Jesus' own resurrection life. In the church where I served my assistantship in the outskirts of Glasgow, there were men who had been made elders for all different sorts of reasons. I could tell you about all these reasons. You would be amazed. But the fact of the matter is, the majority of them had no vital, personal experience of Christ. But just to stay with this phrase for a moment, a witness of Christ's sufferings. What sort of a witness had Peter been to Christ's sufferings? Well, of course, he had been a witness who had denied him. Isn't that right? No less than 3 times when Christ needed him most, he said, I don't know him. I'm not one of his. Now, was that the end of Peter? Well, no. Christ came to him and, having forgiven him, restored him. Remember how that took place. Following the resurrection, as Jesus and the disciples, having had breakfast, sat together by the Sea of Galilee. And three times Jesus said to Peter, no doubt corresponding to Peter's three denials, Simon Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you really love me? And Peter did love Christ, of course he did. And so Jesus said to him, what? Well, he said this to him, I'm going to make you an elder. Or as he literally put it, feed my sheep. And one writer comments, it was out of the ashes of his failure that God raised up Peter to a place of usefulness and service. So there's the privilege he acknowledges. There is the gospel he knows, or if you like, the Christ he knows and is able to speak about when dealing with failures. Dealing with failures. And Peter was able to deal with failures because he himself had been a failure. See the point? The gospel he knows. Thirdly, the maturity he displays. Now, where do we find this here? Well, in the very word, the very term, elder. To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder. Just to be technical for a moment, the Greek word is presbyteros, from which we get the English words presbytery and Presbyterian. I'm a good Presbyterian. Okay, I want you to know that. Okay? The literal meaning of the word is one who is old. The actual Old Testament root of the word is interesting because do you know what it actually means? It means someone with a beard. How many bearded ones do we have here tonight? Yeah, one or two bearded ones. Just a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I went over to Edinburgh for the day. And we did something that we always loved to do. We visited the National Gallery. And one of my most favourite paintings in the Scottish National Gallery is by the late 19th, early 20th century Scottish artist John Lorimer. And it's entitled, it's a huge painting, and it's entitled The Ordination of Elders in a Scottish Kirk. And it's a marvellous painting showing the minister raising his hand in blessing over these six men who are being ordained. Now, what do the six men all have in common? If you look very carefully at the painting, they've all got beards. They've all got beards. Now, when the Bible speaks about the elder in this way, someone old and bearded, it's not speaking so much about chronology, length of years, but rather it's speaking about maturity, depth of wisdom. And of course, it's depth of wisdom that the Bible is talking about, in that age, length of years, is no guarantee of spiritual maturity. Isn't that right? Don't we sometimes say that there's no fool like an old fool? Just as we sometimes say that the wisest heads are sometimes found on the youngest shoulders. Wasn't that Timothy? Remember how Timothy was despised for his youthfulness? And the reason he was so despised was because in terms of spiritual maturity, in terms of Christ-likeness of character, he was way ahead, far in front of many of the more older elders in the church fellowship where he served. The maturity he displays. Fourthly, there is the task he fulfills. Now, you remember Joanna's question to Huck? What are they for? In other words, what do they do? Why do we need them? Well, you'll notice in this passage that the elder is given two titles. Now, did you notice them as we went through the passage? And these two titles are descriptive of the function he performs, his job, in other words. They're both in verse 2. Here is what the elder is to be. This is what the elder is to do. Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, serving as overseers. And so the elder is a shepherd and the elder is an overseer. Now let me say a brief word about each of these. And we'll take the second first. And so first of all, as an overseer, the elder exercises biblical rule. Now let me repeat that. As an overseer, the elder exercises biblical rule. The word translated overseer, again to be technical, just for a moment, is the Greek word episkopos, from which we get the English words episcopal and episcopacy. The word is translated in some versions as bishops, serving as bishops. Now, the interesting thing is that these titles, elders and bishops, are used interchangeably in the Bible. An elder is a bishop, and a bishop is an elder. And so if you turn, for example, to Acts chapter 20, verse 17, from Miletus, Paul sent to Ephesus, for the elders of the church. And then later on in that chapter, in verse 28, Paul is saying to these elders, keep watch over yourselves and all the flock of which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers. Be shepherds of the church of God. Now, the bishops Peter is talking about here don't wear colourful robes and they don't wear pointy hats on their heads. What this word speaks of is someone who has been given authority. That is authority to exercise biblical rule. That is, the task of the elder is to give leadership in the church, to both direct the affairs of the church and discipline, when needed, the members of the church. Now, if I could just say as a kind of aside here, this is why church membership is such an important thing. You know, whenever someone says to me, young folks sometimes say, well, you know, I enjoy going to church, but I don't really need to be a member of a church, do I? And my reply is always this: who then is your elder? Who then is your elder? And so the elder, the bishop, is someone who has been given authority. Authority to exercise biblical rule, and such rule is exercised in the name of Christ and on behalf of Christ. In other words, it's Christ's rule that is being exercised by the elders. You see, we say, don't we, that Christ is the head of the church. But how is that headship exercised? How is Christ's headship put into practice? And the answer is through the rule of the elders. Ah, but I'm reading your minds, you see. Ah, but, you say, how do we know what that is? in that where is the rule of Christ to be found? Now, what's the answer? Can you give me the answer? In the Bible. Isn't that right? In the Bible. And this is why we're saying that the elders exercise biblical rule. Biblical rule. When our church in Edinburgh left the Church of Scotland to become Holyrood Evangelical Church, it was the elders who gave the lead in this. This is what we're going to do. We were quite straight about it. But that decision was only finally come to having searched the Scriptures and seeking through the Scriptures to discern the will of God, to discern the mind of Christ. And you see, this is why it says in Hebrews 13, and Addy suggested that we might look at Hebrews 13. It is really important. But we read in Hebrews 13 and verse 17, obey your leaders and submit to their authority. Now, why do we submit to the leaders? We submit to the leaders because they're submitting to the authority of Christ in his word. That's why we do that. Unless you think that the elders have a cushy number, they're the leaders, you know. They're the leaders. Listen to what the writer goes on to say. Obey your leaders and submit to their authority. They keep watch over you as men who must give an account. Isn't that solemn? Isn't that solemn? There'll be a day of accounting for those who are the leaders. And so as an overseer, the elder exercises biblical rule. Secondly, as a shepherd, the elder provides pastoral care. Says Peter, be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care. Now, here in this passage, Peter doesn't spell out what such pastoral care consists of. But the Bible is rich in its pastoral imagery, not least as we're seeing over this weekend in the 23rd Psalm. And so if I might quote one writer, by definition, the true elder is the shepherd of the flock over which God has placed him, who bears them on his heart, who seeks them when they stray, who defends them from all harm, who comforts them in their pain, and who feeds them with the truth. That's worth repeating, isn't it? Who bears them on his heart, who seeks them when they stray, who defends them from all harm, who comforts them in their pain, and who feeds them with the truth. But here's the really important thing in all of this. In all of this, and like the Lord Jesus Christ, the elder, the pastor, the shepherd, gives his all. Everything that he is. What did Jesus say? And Jesus is the elder's model. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. What should an elder, what should a leader be able to say to you? Well, I tell you what he should be able to say to you. I would die for you. I have you in my heart. And I would die for you. What Peter does here is to tell us exactly how this care is to be exercised in a threefold way. I've got 3 minutes. I'll just give you them as headings almost. One, not grudgingly, but willingly. Verse 2, be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, serving as overseers, not because you must. That's the grudging spirit, isn't it? Must I? Says Peter, not because you must, but like Jesus, because you're willing. Because it's the Father's will that we're doing in caring for his own, not grudgingly, but willingly. Secondly, not greedily, but servant-heartedly. Peter goes on, not greedy for money, that is for financial gain. But the gain can be any kind of gain, you know, gaining a certain status in the church. Not greedy for money, but eager, like Jesus, to serve. Remember Jesus' words? The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve. And remember how Jesus demonstrated this to the disciples in the upper room. You remember when the disciples were arguing as to who was going to wash their feet? No servant was there. And Jesus stripped himself of his robe and put on the servant's, the slave's towel, and began to wash the dirty, manky feet of the disciples. And it's an astonishing picture, isn't it? He was superior to them in every way, the Lord of glory. But in doing what he did, he became inferior to them. He was superior to them, but became inferior to them. The servant, the slave, eager to serve. In Holyrood Evangelical Church, where I was, every couple of months after morning service, we would have a big congregational lunch, and lovely tables would be set out, and a lovely lunch would be prepared. And at these lunches, and we did this because there was just, we just felt there was a symbolism about it. It was the elders who served lunch to the young and to the old. We served the lunch, symbolizing that we're there to serve. Not grudgingly, but willingly. Not greedily, but servant-heartedly. Thirdly, not overbearingly, but humbly. Verse 3, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And examples to the flock, just like Jesus. Now, did Peter have in mind that incident in Mark 10? James and John having asked Jesus for the best seats at the top table in his kingdom. And you remember what Jesus said. This is Mark 10 and verse 44. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great amongst you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And in terms of being such an example to the flock, the sort of example which will have people in the church fellowship saying. Now, in some ways, my friends, this is the great end of being an elder to the flock of God. Being what sort of example? It's having the people of God saying, that's the sort of Christian I want to be. That's the sort of Christian I want to be. My time's gone. In fact, I'm 2 minutes over. The privilege he acknowledges, the gospel he knows, the maturity he displays, the task he fulfills. Fifthly, the reward he seeks. It's the elder's great motivation. Just give you the verse. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. Well done, good and faithful servant. Now, that's just a sweep through these four verses. Let me just point something out to you before I sit down. Because really the application is verses 5 to 7. And in verses 5 to 7, the great theme is that of humility. You have the responsibility of the elders. Then you have the humility of the people of God. And in fact, Peter speaks of three things. I'll just give you the three headings. And if you want to say what I might have said, you can come and speak to me later. Speaks about three things. Firstly, humility before the elders. Verse 5, young men in the same way be submissive to those who are older. Why do you think he specifically speaks to the young men to show humility before the elders? That's something you can think about. Humility before the elders, then humility before one another. You see, the point is, what do we learn from the elders? We learn how to be humble. And so, Peter says, all of you, clothe yourselves with humility towards one another. The word clothe, the literal picture is that of putting on an apron. Not putting on an apron if you're going on MasterChef, but putting on an apron as a slave to wash dirty, manky feet. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility towards one another, because God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. And then he says, humble yourselves under God's mighty hand. Get a concordance and look up the words mighty hand, what that speaks of, the symbolism of it, that he may lift you up in due time. You see, these people have been cast down, they're suffering. And here's the promise. In giving you elders, I'm going to lift you up. Humility before the elders, humility before one another, and finally, humility before God. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. And because we're able to do that, then we'll find that we'll be able to cast all our anxiety on him, because he cares for us. And he cares for us. He's shown that he cares for us, because he's done this for us. He's given us elders. He's given us shepherds to care for our souls. I'm sorry, Johnny, I've gone over by 5.5 minutes. Back to you.